Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. I hope everyone's having a great week so far, and I hope you all have a better weekend. I have to say these things. Habit. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine. How about you?
You know, if I was any better, I'd be twins. You know the deal. Oh, my gosh. I want you to know. I fell asleep about 8:30. And my alarm was set down real low, right? And I woke up, like, oh, my God, what day is it? And I looked, and I went, oh, my gosh, it was 9:42. And I said, oh, thank God I woke up. So, well, could have been worse, right? I could have slept through my own show. I think I did that once. I do. I have to admit, I think I did that once. It was a very long time ago. Now, you know, I mean, yeah, but I got nervous. So I ran around real quick and did all those little things I had to do, and got here, and I went, thank God, you know, but, you know, one of my little flaky days, I guess, always doing something crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you have a good week?
So far, so good, hot, usual.
I hear that. Is the weather still hot?
It's 75 right now, but it's lightly raining.
Well, I hope it cools things off for you. Because sometimes the rain can work with you or against you. You know, some days it makes it more humid. Other days it cools everything right off. So, I don't know if there's anything. We had a kickoff of a new show this past week. Jeremy asked.
It went well.
Started his new show called The Headliner's Ball. Big success. You know, his partner in crime, Pam. Everybody's partner in crime is Pam. But it seemed to be very, it seemed to be a success. That made me smile. I hope it made him smile too. And, so that was real nice. It was refreshing to have another new show, you know. Like, always a breath of fresh air when that happens. See, what else is happening? Gosh, I don't have anything exciting to talk about. That's terrible. Okay, I should spend less time sleeping. I know I would have exciting things. I don't know. But we have some great poetry on the board. And we have, I don't know, it looks like maybe a good night of it, you know. It's at least you and I. I don't know. We might have another caller or so. Time will tell. I have not seen Pam, so I'm not sure if she's calling or not. But you and I guess we can pull it off if we have to. Just have to talk slow. I keep reminding myself, talk slow. But so I don't know. I guess we can get things started. See what goes from there. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I want to put up the first one for you to read by Wichita Rick. And here we go. There we go.
Voices in the Night by Wichita Rick. Seeking safety while others are sleeping, to rest in a dispute with a familiar game of whether the mind or body will win. When losing traction, will another soul comprehend even a fraction? Meaningless to many, but a few keep hope in scope. Planning and practicality save souls in print, but real people have understanding and offer their own spin. Wandering from the middle travels outward, east or west, north to south, even an Aussie or from across the pond can give hope. Giving is receiving, simple samples offer light, taken in can, block bites, going out producing an unknown grin. Faceless names, a soul behind each keystroke, varying opinions offer a new vote. Hidden bond often easy to find, meshed together once lonely issues are found in you, conversing in space, some silent while others seem lost in a race, never really knowing when they will find that meaningful antidote. Suddenly, interaction can become a tempting attraction, exposing hidden emotions, a new devotion, silent song into a joyous hymn. Far apart minds now riding a mutual rift, easier to make light if others have the same plight. Randomness can rule when minds are often short, once a great thought soon will abort, hopefully not lost forever if we tug too hard on that string. Absent minds left meandering once, locked down, now offering possibilities, growing with knowledge, now developing with each insight. End poem. All right, Jane, what you got for that one?
Well, I think it was a great piece. I love the voices in the night thought. Some of my greatest work's always been, sitting in the quiet in the middle of the night. So it's interesting where that night, I'm using my air quotes here, but you can't see me, can lead us all. It's an interesting concept and a wonderful one. It just gives us our space to our creativity and many other things, So I think that's interesting. But it was well written, Rick, and thank you so much for sharing, as always. Great piece. Yeah. optimistic.
Thank you, Jean. This offers up a little bit more of a positive note to those conversing online or in chat rooms or wherever they may be sitting in the moment, because it does offer the thought Aussies and Brits, those different different other voices in the night, offering up a thought as to a topic, a subject, a complaint that one might not have thought of yet, and you get a varied opinion coming another way that gives them a pause to actually, oh, okay, maybe there's something in that, maybe there's hope in actually walking that or trying that idea. It kind of hits on that idea of those who have maybe suffered the same plight, because he does use that word too, as to its varying degrees, whether it's illness or aches, pains or something. There is that note to clarity being born through the voices of others as they offer up notes of what they do in such situations. So there's a nice touch to kind of living peacefully in the moment, as opposed to other venues across the internet where it's just no holds barred and no quarter given as they rip you to shreds. So this forms a different thought. I like the idea of never really knowing when they will find that meaningful antidote, but the interaction becomes a tempting attraction, exposing hidden emotions and new devotion's silent song into a joyous hymn. So there's that note to something positivity coming out of the situation. If nothing else, it offers up a point of a like-minded individual just conversing in the moment. Even if they don't come to a conclusion or anything, there is that note that even for that brief span of time, you get taken off of that which is bothering you or ailing you. So you've got a little bit of downtime from it, even while discussing it. And that would be back to you.
Back to me. Who? No, I'm only kidding. I'm going to wind this. Okay, well, the next one that I have to put up, and yeah, Rick, I have to agree with you. I'm going to repeat what he said in the room. He says, yes, interesting, because I agree with speaking to you. Thoughts of learning using a chat room with others with similar health issues. It is not always a problem, but a solution when many minds come together. Yeah, because you learn from each other, and you know, it's very true. Very true. I remember those days. But, okay. So, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Poetic Picasso. And I have an audio for that. So, there we go.
There's an urban legend that speaks about the creepy clown of horror, terrorizing the minds of the poor children of terrible dreams conjured, whose nights are haunted by the fear of his maniacal smile and laughter. His daunting murmurs they can hear penetrating the cracks of their walls. They say he once was human and performed in a traveling circus. And one day he vanished into the mystery of the tales of the crypt. He was never located, nor was there any true vestige of his body. But the children say his soul remains, trapped within the clutch of time. Every evening the piercing sound of an imposing music resounds suddenly, entering through the small orifices of the creaking doors of homes, reaching the frightened children, then cowering in a round ball devoid of light as they listen to his echoic breath. In descry the floating balloons. Thus, a giant box camouflaged in the colours of the circus appears from the dark shadows of the nocturnal dripping dewdrop drops of blood. The creaking noise of the handle of a book chimes the turning of a crank, and the horripilating image of a devilish clown pops forward, laughing. With his alabaster eyes and crimson tongue beneath his sharp rays of teeth, the inevitable face of the monster, the hopeless children dread to see in person. For it is sad that once he visits you, there is no absolute return from death. He is the ghastly reaper of all of the screaming souls of doomed children. He is the Jack in the Box. Can you hear the music?
Great read, Frank. Sorry, I was waiting for the laughter. It didn't come. thank you very much for that. It is much appreciated. I'll tell you what. Funny, Jack in a Box for a title. That was my very first job. I worked at a Jack in a Box on Long Island. Boy, were we busy. Anyway, this kind of reminds me of Stephen King's It, the clown in that book and the movie itself, because he hits on those notes, the kids, the disappearing, the floating balloons, the shark and teeth. Nice touch. But it's all something that sort of why kids and adults are so fearful of clowns, whether it's from going to the circus or being scared in the moment, or just that something about the makeup just kind of terrifies the soul, so to speak. But I like that thought. Oh, here it is. Tongue beneath his sharp rays of teeth, the ineffable face of the monster, the helpless children dread to see in person. For it is said, once he visits you, there is no absolute return from death. He is the ghastly reaper of all of the screaming souls of doomed children. I like that last stanza. Although clowns don't bother me, but I hear it is something that can be quite debilitating for some people. Heavenly fear. Mm-hmm. Do you fear the clown?
No. But I appreciate the terror of a creepy clown. You know. My sister-in-law is a clown. How about that? She wasn't creepy, though.
Well, that's a bit more literal than figurative.
a creepy clown, one made up with a strange and scary face, that can unnerve anyone, really, you know, you think about it. But for the most part, clowns are okay. It's okay. It's all cool. You know, a couple of horror flicks have tried to, you know, ruin the reputation of those good, sweet clowns. Yes. With a lot of success in most cases. But this was an excellent, excellent rate. The imagery throughout was wonderful. And, you know, Frank's voice always lends such a wonderful, an ambiance to the piece, you know, because you're not just reading the words, you're getting that theatrical performance from him, and it always lends a background to it all. But really well done, really, really well done. And it's not good for a weaker heart than my own, you know. But great job, Frank. I really like this one. Nice job.
Mm-hmm. Even Pennywise looked good until he opened up his mouth and he saw all them razor sharp teeth.
Yeah. Pennywise is, yeah, creepy dude, man. Creepy dude.
And it also reminds me of that there was there's an episode of The Twilight Zone where Billy Mummy, before he hit the airwaves of Will Robinson on Lost in Space, he was a little boy who could turn make people disappear. And he wants to turn this guy into a jack-in-the-box until his parents begged him to make him go to the other side, make him go to the field. And he saw this bobbing head going back and forth.
I don't remember that episode. I remember Will Robinson. Danger, danger, Will Robinson, danger.
Yeah, I think he did two or three. He did two or three Twilight episodes.
I guess that is something.
Yeah, this one was a little creepy because he could make it snow. He could punish people, and he hated sound. And he was if you wanted television, he made it happen, and always a show that he wanted.
Huh. Is that something? Yeah, Twilight Zone was a big thing. Frank would have been good on the Twilight Zone. He could be narrating in the background. Yeah, no. So.
Rick's got an antique one, and now it'd be a while before he plays with it.
It looks good right where it's at, right, Rick?
Yeah, Rick knows that Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. Well, I watched quite a few episodes of Twilight Zone, but my memory's never been good like that for me to remember one specific episode.
Well, it's hard.
Maybe
to, even when they do the New Year's Eve where they run them all day long. It's hard getting the season 5 episodes, the 1 hour episodes.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. What was that season 4?
Yeah.
One together. All right. So where would you like to go next?
Mm-hmm. Well, piece I have is by Poetic Creation. And it's called If Looks Could Kill. And I think I'm going to read this one. I know. It's not my usual four-liner, but I figured maybe I could contribute a little bit and, you know, I wouldn't make you read everything. So let me, here we go. If Looks Could Kill by Poetic Creation. Her hair is red and long. Her dress is bright white and long. And her legs, they are long. Crossed together, folded together like exquisitely crafted origami. She was riding in the elevator, going to the top. The penthouse floor, she said. She was standing there, her right leg crossed over her left. In some way, it was seductive. Feeling, and the square grid, the tessellations fell down, like snowflakes falling, clumping together in cumulus cloud clusters. She looked up at me, and with an overly rictus smile, that cracked open that whatever so assurant left to spill yolks on square tile flooring. Beside, alongside, my manhood and effigy, there was a bitterness, not born from her, but this bitterness I bore. My lemonade is sweetened with plenty of sugar. I know that she could eviscerate. I've seen it before in the last universe and more found within me. Transcendental currents flow. They flow within me. Yet I drift through them, absent, a tether to ground me. It might be hopeless, so I still hold on to my pride. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Don't you just hate it when that happens? You get into an elevator, and somebody's just staring at you, noticing, as you put it, the long red hair, the bright white long dress, and the legs. Of course, the legs are long. Twisted like origami. I like that thought. And then the elevator ride there itself and the look that he's getting and the nervousness in I look up to the ceiling and a square grid. The tessellations fell down like snowflakes falling, clumping together in cumulus cloud clusters. She looked up at me with an overly rictus smile. Boy, that offers up a nice notation of death, a rictus smile. And I that next stanza cracked open offering of that, the thought of a manhood being kind of spilled, and then the evisceration on that bottom end. Still, though I still hold on to my pride, he's kind of left, what's the word I'm looking for? Uncomfortable, even though it doesn't appear he's done anything, let alone even opened his mouth. It's just that he's getting a really vicious, viscous grin that kind of, yo, back off. I'll kill you where you stand. As though, hey, you don't meet my standards. What the hell are you doing up my elevator since I'm going to the penthouse? Nice touch. What about you, since you got to read it?
Well, I think it was a well-written well-written plot of an encounter. You know, not necessarily one that, you know, went his way, but an encounter just the same. Unexpected. I like that line as well, like exquisitely crafted origami. You know, you don't necessarily think of that when someone has their legs crossed. But clever thoughts there. Nicely done. You know, the look, you know, how, you know, you're looking and, you know, kind of taking it all in. Yeah, you know, she gives you that look like, I don't know. Not so sure that that's a good idea. You know, maybe you want to back up a little bit. But definitely a well done piece. Great wording throughout and great thoughts, definitely. So, PC, I have to say, I really like this one.
It's a visual piece of your alley.
You think? Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That one was beyond brassy.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I did. I really like the imagery. I like the whole thoughts of it. And you can kind of visualize that the whole, you know, that kind of sounds redundant. I say nice imagery, but you can kind of envision, like, that all the transpiring of this encounter. So, I think in that respect, it was excellent.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, that's the kind of moment when you wish, hey, you know what? She thinks this little of me in the moment. Hey, why don't I make it perfect? And you fart on her.
Oh, well.
make her suffer going up the elevator since she wants to be that nasty.
Unless you get out of floor before and do it on your way out the door.
Yes. Exit the elevator and let her linger with the aromatics on the way to the top.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, we have a caller. We have Luke Jr. joining us. So let me pick him up.
Oh, cool.
Hello, Luke.
Hello.
Luke,
how are you
doing?
I am doing pretty well. How about you?
Wonderful.
Yeah, me too. Did you happen to hear PC's piece?
I did, and I thought that it was very well written and very descriptive, but I don't think I'd be able to say anything on the same level as what Rex has said.
You know, we all have our way of expressing. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness gracious, yeah. So, well, I appreciate that one. Let me see now. What do I have next? My next magic trick. Go ahead, Rex. For my next magic trick.
Pull a rabbit out of your hat. Ah, oops, wrong hat.
Oh, my God. See, we're just creatures of habit. I am a creature of habit. Okay, now where am I? There we are. Okay, the next poem coming down the line is by Arcana Amor, and this one is called Corvus Correct. And I have an audio for that one, so let me hit. What's it?
conspiracies gather in twilight skies. His passerine flight of somber wing, with obsidian feathers as black as pitch, and clicking croaks that cry his calls. An appetite to scavenge this corvid creature that hides his spoils with devious guile, ever more impressing, endearing endeavors. His mimicry speaks of relished recall. To settle upon some lonely headstone, midst desperate despair from lamented wails, a harbinger of sorrow and deathly demise, that swoops the steeples of sprouting spires. An icon of gruesome Gothic notions, whose dark silhouettes paint sleeping graves, haunting the shade to fade from view, melting into darkness of deepest night. A sentient survivor of spectral shadows, that dwells his dominion midst gloaming gloom, mocking and taunting with quoted quoths, whose mournful beguile enraptured Poe.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Luke, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
I'm going to say that to begin with, I thought that we were going into like a Lion King kind of thing. But continuing from that, I'm actually going to say that it feels very like fantasy-based. Just kind of some of the lines that I liked the most would be, an appetite to scavenge this corvid creature that hides his spoils with devious guile, ever more impressing, endearing, endeavor. His mimicry speaks of relished recall. That was one of my favorite parts. But overall, just a very well written bite.
Excellent. Thank you, Luke. All right, Gene, how about you?
I'm giving
you got on mute.
I already did. No. Don't miss out. First of all, when I started reading it, I'm going, okay. And I was looking at the title. And of course, I had to hunt it up because I wasn't familiar with the term Corvus Correct. And it's also known as the Liberator, the Deliverer, the Raven Lord. And I thought, oh, okay. I knew there was a meaning if it was used in Arcana's piece. But what wonderful, wonderful imagery throughout, and how he described, you know, the raven as we went along. I mean, incredible ideas and thoughts of this. An appetite to scavenge this corvid creature that hides his spoils with devious guile, ever more impressing, endearing endeavors. His mimicry speaks of relished recall. Wonderful use of alliteration. Just a really another great piece by Arcana. I do like his work. I think that he writes well, and he's very descriptive with his thoughts. And I also love, you know, how he brought Poe into it at the very end. You know, I thought that was a nice touch, but not, you know, and Poe can be considered like kind of overdone sometimes, but not in this, I don't think. And just there, you know, nod to him at the end, and that was it. But nice piece and really well read as well. So thank you, Arcana, very much.
Oh, absolutely. This was a well thought out piece. It's dark without being oppressive. I mean, you hit that first line, twilight skies, and then somber wing. I like the thought obsidian feathers as black as pitch. A nice touch there. Clicking croaks. Let's see what. Then the angle, you got devious. Then you bring in the lonely headstone, desperate despair, lamented wail, a harbinger of sorrow. Even with all the words pointing to darkness and death, it isn't oppressive. It's almost an homage, so to speak. And then gruesome gothic notions, dark silhouettes, melting into darkness of deepest night, still spectral shadows. But I was already thinking of Poe when he got to the bottom line. I thought, what a nice touch, mournful and taunting with quoted quotes, whose mournful tone, mournful beguile it raptured Poe. What a great finish, offering up a notion as to what Poe might have found such a quality to note of with his poem, The Raven, and its length. And Arcana offers up those last two lines, along with the notion of how dark it is, but not really. There's beauty within that darkness itself, and he offers up the raven in that view, which is nice, walking as to what Poe might have found so endearing about it to begin with. I like that. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
We go. We go. Now, where do we go from here? I'll tell you what, Rex, I'm going to get you to read the next one, and then we've got to
try. All right.
This one's by Daniel DeChino.
Life by Daniel DeChino. Sometimes I pretend, but I hope to never be pretentious. In between fantasy and reality, there's a sharp, unforgiving line. So, I don't pretend to be a biologist, a theologian, scholar, or even a thinker. I just try to live. What exactly is life? So many things in our brain, the tool we use to figure things out that we can't figure out. The corpus callosum connects all types of perception. That could be consciousness. But is consciousness life? There's a lot of corpus callosum walking around. I would hate to think how many billions of murders are committed each day, if that were the case. Trees breathe, bacteria move, ants collaborate, crows socialize, humans sometimes think. A better question might be, what is thought? A better question might be, what is life worth? A better question might be, do we really understand the question? And poem. All right, Gene, you got to kick this one. Aha. Gene?
Gosh, dang. Yeah, you got me that time. You got me. Don't need to smell, tell anybody. It's set. I think this is a great piece by Daniel. I think that it was clever, and he wrote this for a contest on hypocrisy. So I think that kind of gives you that tail end, you know, where the better question might be, what is thought? A better question might be, what is life worth? A better question might be, do we really understand the question? And I think that, you know, that's just that changing of minds, and, you know, you say one thing and it turns out a different way, and, you know, back and forth, and the choices are so many. But as always, you know, Dan really hit on some great notes. You know, sometimes I pretend, but I hope it never be pretentious. In between fantasies and reality, there is a sharp, unforgiving line. You know, so I don't pretend to be a biologist, a theologian, a scholar, or even a thinker. I just try to live. You know, this is a great lead into this piece, and you know, I think that he tied it all up at the end just as well. So, just a wonderful piece, Dan, and thanks for sharing this one with us. And good luck in the contest.
Thank you, Gene. Luke, how about you?
I'm going to say that it truly reminds me of life and purpose. And, you know, as an example, you've got, like, trees breathe, bacteria move, ants collaborate, crows socialize, and humans sometimes think. And it just kind of feels like that is a question in itself based on, you know, we're always searching for our purpose, and sometimes we don't really know what our purpose is, and it can always change. And then you've got with, like, trees and how they breathe. You could even say that it's, like, based on instinct and how life is supposed to be.
Oh, I like that. Thank you, Luke. I was drawn to that one stanza that you just read, too. I think I went for a different thought. Humans sometimes think was that nice ending to that, and it hit me with the idea of that quote, I think, therefore I am. So it brings about that notation. Even with he drops in the thought of the corpus callosum, that bridge between the two hemispheres of the brain, that pathway, that fibrous network that interconnects one side of the brain to the other and fires along the pathways, bringing both thought and idea across one side to the other, because one side's supposed to be the artful link and the other side's supposed to be the thoughtful angle. Yet he's offering up that baited angle of those who just walk around without the thought, without carefully iterating that which is going on and just following, so to speak. So the idea of coming to the back end of this, a better question might be, what is thought? A better question might be, what is life worth? A better question might be, do we really understand the question? So the idea of what some would call life, as opposed to some who hit on that life as a thoughtful projection of what could possibly be, are we being too superficial and not really understanding the question to begin with that we should be asking of ourselves, which I thought was a nice touch. Thank you, Daniel. All right, Jane. We're back to
you. Okay, well, hope everybody's sitting down. No, I'm always different. But we have part 8 of the series. Never Sleep Again, Sleeping Beauty, and by Paul Gondo. So we have an audio for this. So here we go. It's going to be good.
Please, please, I beg you, if you leave us now, we will run far away and never return. You can keep your kingdom. I just want her.
Well, since you asked nicely, we'll finish you first, so you won't have to wash or bleed out.
No, please, I'm begging you.
No need to thank me. Just being my regular cute self.
Oh my god.
Let me guess. Another nightmare. Sweat and breath under her sheets, bare undressed chills would creep up her sleek neck, denying all relief as she sat in the dark, ironically unable to sleep. 5 years she slumbered unaware, her number was drawn under heavy sedation for nearly 2,000 dawns. She couldn't yawn without fear she'd slip back into a snooze and lose another half a decade worth of her youth. To her, sleeping wasn't the only thing left corrupt. She had fits of terror each time she woke up, anxiously wondering the date and time, leaving no rest for her crestfallen mind. Heading out the door to nowhere in particular, she needed air and hungered for dinner. One final stop before her dream of revenge and vengeance at hand would come to an end. She paced through the village looking for a brew to pillage, fully aware of what place she graced, since the queen's castle walls surrounded the place. Stumbling upon a local pub quite unique, she breached the archways through the crooked creek.
What kind of fairy tale animal does a girl have to kiss to get a drink around here?
My eyes.
Sleeping Beauty.
Blessing, great.
I That's one heck of a story about Red and Sleepy, but I heard it went different.
Well, you know, artistic license, you see.
Well, until we meet again.
Evening, my lady.
Beside Sleepy's stool sat two drunken fools arguing together quite loud about a vehicle from the clouds.
Harold, for the last time, just admit you sold it. Admit you sold it, give me half the money like last time and we could be friends again. You've been telling me the same lie for 5 years. Last year it was a flood, one time it was locusts. Just admit you sold the pumpkin for booze money.
I won't admit it, I did it, not this time.
You're telling me the prize pumpkin we've been working our asses off growing for the Queen's wedding ceremony was destroyed by a flying bus.
Fooling bus. Buses can't fly.
And they don't drive on sunshine either. So how the hell did it fall from the sky?
I don't know. I don't work for the bus company. I don't know their route.
And the bus wasn't destroyed.
Continued on to the next stop.
Someone got out.
Waved goodbye.
So instead of believing that you sold the pumpkin for drinking money, like you have every year for the past 5 years, you want me to believe that a magic school bus from the clouds fell and crushed it. A magic school bus.
We live in a world with talking animals, fairies, hideous giant monsters, and magical plants. And you don't believe in a magic school bus?
Fair play.
My deepest sympathies for your pumpkin.
She finished her grog, put toes to logs, and headed out the front door. Sleepy couldn't quite hide a smile that sneaked a whole mile wide, but inside she knew the time had come true to decide now or never to collect the debt she was due. A whole month to plan and vet, to work them like marionettes, she'd waited long enough since seeking justice on the previous quartet. Almost a month since she'd reawakened, forsaken no more, her steadiness unshaken. Scaling brick and mortared walls, fingers gripped with their awl, for a fall would solve little and perhaps mark her death. But it was the quickest, most direct way to evade and prevent an escape from the Queen who'd Sleepy hoped to condemn. Upended, Sleepy slotted, her hands in space allotted, until espotting a fine line of soldiers trotting single file, no time to falter. She knew she stood no chance to a head-on advance, she'd have to play this quietly, so higher she climbed defiantly. Slipping herself over the crest of smoothened window frames and bejeweled headrests, she spotted a closet and headed inside, her stomach had knotted with desire's fiery cries. The Queen scurried in and dismissed her men before the mercenaries headed back out to continue patrolling again. Back against the closet, the Queen removed her corset, slowly heading towards her chamber's bathroom entry. Sleepy could wait no more, and to the Queen's neck she would deposit her blade hastily and intently. As soon as the lock clicked behind, she sprang with vicious murder in mind, hoping to catch the Queen unaware while powdering her nose or brushing her hair, bursting through the door before immediately being disarmed, but not by an act of violence. She was felled by an act of charm.
Henry?
Aurora.
The golden vase shattered as Sleepy splattered against the cold stone slabs once more. As Charming knelt down over the battered, tattered Sleepy and whispered to his love nevermore.
How long has it been?
Now he's gone. I don't know why. Until this day, sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time.
Great job, Gonzo.
Yes, that wonderful read there, Gonzo. Thank you for the sound pot. It is very much appreciated. And damn, that was quite different. Hey, Luke, what do you? I don't know if you've heard any of the rest of the parts of this, but what'd you think of this one? Luke? Did we lose Luke already?
I don't know. I see him. Are you on mute, Luke? Well, doesn't sound like he's taking after me.
Why don't you go ahead? Yeah.
I thought this was another excellent installment to the series. You know, it's so off the beaten path, but it follows its own path well, you know? I have to say, I was really cracking up between the pumpkin and the falling school bus. And, you know, those references there really had me going because I'm like, okay. And I was like, oh, where are we going now? Because, you know, he has so many angles that fall into these stories of his. And I was really going, oh, she's going to kill the queen. She's going to kill the queen. And the next thing you know, the whole story changed. And I thought that was a clever twist and left him something definitely for number nine. And a whole different turn there as well, because now she's been stronger. But definitely a wonderful imaginative piece full of, wow, thoughts and ideas and different characters. And, you know, as always, it's very well presented. And I have to say that's kind of the fun of it, you know. With different voices and different expressions. But yeah, the pumpkin. I have to say, I like the pumpkin and the falling school bus. I did. Something about it just had me going. So excellent work. And thanks for sharing, Gonzo. Appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm wondering if this might be the last one in this particular series, just because of how he laid out the ending. The fact that this all now, after eight episodes, it all boils down to a because he offs up 2,000 sleeping days, so 2,000 sleeping moons since last year woke. So I'm wondering if this is all one huge dream sequence, because right off the bat we get back to the magic bus from the original so long ago, far back, and where it all started. Which was a definite, and then the voice of Red coming back in, and we hadn't heard that since the beginning. So I got to go back and re-listen to all of them again.
You know,
just
that makes great sense, Rex. That really does. That makes great sense. I'm not sure if you're right or you're wrong, but it would make sense because, you know, it makes sense that she was waking up from this dream sequence, and there's Prince Charming. So that would be clever. That would be very clever. So, Gonzo, if that's not what your intent.
Because all the insanity that he used in, like the golden goose that shot eggs out to splatter Red in one episode, using it like a machine gun, that was pretty cool. And everything else, the queen, the heads, the jolly green giant, so to speak, and everything else that came and went into all of this. Even the thoughts with the magic mirror was brought back briefly in here. Let me guess, another nightmare? Almost a hint right there up in the top, plus Prince Charming. It kind of walks that angle of, I'm wondering, is this the end of this particular round of goodies? Because this does walk along that line with that ending of something, that dream sequence, that nightmare sequence of 2,000 sleeping nights has come to a close, because all the insanity that he brought forth with each and every one of the characters kind of walks on that notion of, wow, that was one long and wealthy realm that I just spent dipping into, and now I'm awake once more. So it kind of hits on that idea, all right, because it turned now into the phase where Sleeping Beauty and Prince Charming really get married, because you remember, Red broke up the marriage originally, going way back.
Well, you got to wake up memory.
I'm wondering if he's used this return for another angle to play off of, which would be cool as well.
Right. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah, see, now you give me more to think about. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a great, fun series. I mean, he dragged it out to eight with a whole load of impressive detail and fun, because this reads almost like a rap. But it's done in a huge story verse. And he does hit on that thought, hey, you don't believe in a magic school bus crushing my pumpkin, but we live in a land where animals talk and fairies and all that, point taken. A little bit of wry humor dropping in as well. So,
Well, Rex.
All right, Luke.
That was part,
yes.
Wait, that was part eight, right? So I just went over to his page because I'm nosy. So part nine.
Yeah, this one's number eight.
Two parts in all. And then there's a part nine, and then there's a two-part finale.
Okay, so we are taking another twisted turn. Okay, perfect.
Yeah. But I like your thoughts.
Very interesting.
That was pretty good. Correct.
Luke, did you get to hear this?
I heard some of it. What I will say is it felt like a familiar kind of story with lots of twists and turns, and it never goes the direction that you think it's going to go. So it's kind of full of very welcome surprises.
Yeah, he's done that throughout, because every time you get into a little bit, it started off with Red Riding Hood and the wolf, and it's morphed from piece to piece to piece, and it always comes back to Red and Sleeping Beauty having a serious fights and trying to kill each other. So I'm wondering where the three episodes will take us as an ending.
Right. I doubt they live happily ever after.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. He's going to roll this into 11 episodes. It makes it an epic, and damn, they ought to put the whole thing into a full audio with all of them together as a beast for people to listen to.
I need to go back to part one.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll enjoy it. They're a blast.
It's interesting, I'll tell you. It's a whole lot of thinking going on, you know? Clever stuff. Now we have a caller, Rex.
Okay.
A caller from area code 470. Hello, 470. Who's calling you?
It's Belle.
It's Belle.
Hey, Belle.
Hi.
Hello.
I don't think you got to hear that, Belle, did you?
No, I did not get to hear that, but I hear so much talk on it, I'm going to have to go back and read it. So if it's got that much conversation going, it's probably something that's going to interest me, I'm sure.
Oh, he's done these. This is episode number 8 in this particular series, and they're excellent pieces all rolled up, rolling down a mad happenstance.
Oh, wow. I'll definitely have to read that. Definitely.
Well, you'll enjoy it.
Can't wait.
It is a whole series of good stuff, twists and turns and thoughts and that. Whatever. Okay. Let me see now. Okay, Luke, can I get you to read the next piece?
Okay.
Okay, awesome. This piece is put up by Steve Chapman and the seller.
Okay. The seller by Steve Chapman. Hot iron and gunpowder permeate our walls as thunderclap percussions shake our backyard swing, quake our home. A stone grows on my chest, squeezing me slowly. My lungs, a leaky balloon. Black and white static suffocates my mind, paralyzing my limbs. A familiar 4-beat rhythm, like Papa taught. His voice guides me now. I pirouette on the bone chalk snowbank. The cold cellar reminds me of a Ukrainian winter. I choke on tiny brown snowflakes as cinder and dust fall on my tongue. I am a hummingbird fluttering to the cornflower evergreens to pillage crimson marigolds and ebony tulips. I tiptoe across the frozen Silurian lake, rapidly flaying my wings. I spin wildly past the dead indigo sun, my eyes closed as I glide through the rancid air like a frenzied fairy tale swan in this Crayola world. Daddy's bleed rainbow, mommy's weep gold. The rumbling stops. I open my eyes, wheezing. Across me on the pantry balcony, an audience of two remain, Miss Pickles and Mr. Flower. Looking deft and thin, I curtsy them. Perhaps tomorrow, dancing can wait. And I walk outside to feel the sunshine on my face.
Great read, Luke. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Belle, you're the newbie in the room. What'd you think?
Wow. What a piece. I was reading the author notes or whatever at the end, or what you know, as anxiety, fear, childhood, Ukraine, and the war, and just the beginning of it. Not knowing at the beginning, I kind of figured it out on the second stanza where it says, a stone grows on my chest, squeezing, and slowly my lungs, a liquid loom, black and white static suffocates my mind, paralyzing my limbs. And that's just, I think, the beginning of the war, and it's the rat-tat-tat, and, you know, the familiar beat. I mean, this is just an amazing piece. Just the imagery and the metaphors in here just strikes you. I mean, then to know what it is at the end, you kind of gather it, you know, when he says, he's breathing in, you know, the period of the bone coats, you know, snowbank. I mean, I could just keep going on with this piece. It just strikes me to the core. Amazing, amazing piece. Just great imagery and great way to make the point. Great message.
Excellent. Fallon, thank you very much. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think that this was, you know, a powerful piece when you think about where, you know, he's coming from. You know, fear, childhood, Ukraine, and the war. You know, children hiding in cellars, you know, to stay safe. You know, using your imaginations to, you know, take them away from what's happening around them. And, you know, Miss Pickles and Mr. Flower, I assume they have pantry items, you know, that were sitting on a shelf somewhere, you know, and things that, you know, just kind of entertained, that the child entertained themselves, you know, with these imaginative ideas. But, you know, dancing can wait, and I can walk outside to feel the sunshine on my face. What a wonderful thing that must be, you know, to be able to do after, you know, all the fear and the darkness and the, you know, just horrible things happening around them. So I think that it was just really well done again. Cedar Chapman, I've only read a few pieces of theirs, and I think that they're really he's a pretty amazing writer in a lot of ways. He really takes you where he takes you there, and he puts you into it. It's like that one last week we read, Rex. Do you remember the one about the father and the daughter walking down the aisle in the wedding?
Yeah.
Like how he just puts you into it, and you know, he just does a wonderful, wonderful job with that. So. Cedar, thank you very much for sharing with us tonight. This is another very well done piece. Just a whole different angle, different direction, but equally as well done. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Gene. And Luke, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, the way I feel about this is that I really connected to it, to the title. And I really like how he describes something like snowflakes, but he turns it into something like tiny brown snowflakes as cinder and dust fall on my tongue. And there's all these really creative like visuals within this piece, and I've just like overall I was amazed, to be honest.
Excellent. Great comments, everybody. That bit you just read there, Luke, I was drawn to the line above it. The cold cellar reminds me of a Ukrainian winter. And then dropping that, the thought of the tiny brown snowflakes on was great. But that next stanza really kind of hit me because it reminded me of a movie, the black and white version, All Quiet on the Western Front, where this singular moment in the film as the soldiers looking out from the trenches. And he sees this butterfly flying in front of him. And in that mm-hmm. moment, he notices the depth of life, even through the verity of all the death that is going on around it and the destruction. And that whole stanza hits me with that thought. Notice the beauty right in the moment. I am a hummingbird fluttering through the cornflower evergreens to pillage crimson marigolds and ebony tulips. I tiptoe across the frozen cerulean lake, rapidly flaying my wings. I spin wildly past the dead indigo sun, my eyes closed as I glide through the rancid air like a frenzied fairy tale swan in this Crayola world. Daddy's bleed rainbow, mommy's weave gold. The color that's drawn in here has me hitting on that notion of just something that stands out, like that black and white movie with just the butterfly itself, that little bit of purity in the moment. The colors offer up that note to seeing something past the darkness of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Great piece, Vita. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Rebecca to you.
Okie doke. Well, Shalyn, I have one for you. And I'm going to put it up right now.
This is by Luke Aylin, I think it is. It's called Whispering Woods. Eyes look out from the wooden world, emerging from darkened passageways, twisting through whispering hills. Spoken secrets open on broken desk, wings of children calling from fairy rings. For old women's eyes to come to life, to emerge from her hidden world, casting from her shadow sky, an earthy stare opening her story of witnessing stars. Spoken score, spoken world, wooden men of 11 den, follow fairy shadows circling mist in the air. Winged children open oaken doors from another land and hilltop, seeking tree kingdoms. Follow the fairy shadow, obey the mist, the magic rules between the worlds, her dust blown over the ages, gathered by mountain's breath. Blown into the owl's wings, only his eyes can catch the ancient voice. The pass over her story to 11 bloodlines, keepers of the scroll, earth little kings, forage mushrooms, homes for little men with wings, whispering hills, wind down through secret sanctuaries, little doors shut their worlds away as voices of the mist disappear. Into the fables as the old one who holds the story of the stars closes her eyes. End point.
Ooh, great read, Fel. Thank you very much. All
Thank
right,
you.
Jean. This kind of walks up your alley, so to speak.
It's my alley night. I think this is a great tale, Whispering. Did I do it again? Yep, I did. Yay. I think
yes,
this is
you're muted.
I thought I was muted. This has got me all paranoid now. I think that the imagery in this was wonderful, and the descriptions of the Whispering Hills and the woods, spoken secrets open on broken dusk, wings of children calling from fairy rings for the old woman's eye to come to life, to emerge. Just wonderful wording in this, and I think it really gives you that feeling of the woods, the whispering woods, and it speaks of the magic behind the story, and I think that really shines through. I have to say though, the last stanza, whispering hills, wind down through secret sanctuaries. Little doors shut their worlds away as voices of the myth disappear into the fable as the old one who holds the story of the stars closes her eyes. I love that. I think the ending of this was just amazing. Amazing. Because you just see whether it's sleep or the significance of that, whether it's sleep or death, is a beautiful way of saying it and wording it and bringing you to that space in the story itself. And I think it was just excellent. So great job, Luke, and thank you for sharing with us.
Well said, Jean. Thank you. And Luke, how about you?
I'm going to say that it felt like quite the invitation. A part that I was drawn to is eyes look out from a wooden world, emerging from darkened passageways, twisting through whispering hills. And my feelings on this is, it just feels like the description is very beautiful, and it feels like a perfect entry point to a world that you could feel is similar to a place that is just full and blossoming of imagination and really great visuals, similar to maybe things like Alice in Wonderland, but slightly different, with the sense of, like, I was really drawn to the hills. The fact that the hills are like whispering is like a sense of secrecy. So it's almost like a place that's very kind of hidden. And then kind of going from there, I'd say it just feels like everything is like never too loud or too distracting. There's just something quite comforting about the woods that are always whispering.
Excellent. Great comment, Luke. Thank you. All right, Phil, you got to read it. How about you? What'd you think?
Oh, what a lovely read, too. Thank you. It was very whimsical to me, and it's almost as if your dreams are upon a breeze's exhale, that you just, if you just quietly listen, all your dreams can come true upon that, just the slight breeze. It's just, it's the voices are there. If you just listen to the, you know, the magic, and the magic is even though it's smaller, these things live so much smaller than we are, it's much bigger than we are. So this is just an excellent piece, and I can see why Gene loves pieces like this. It just brings a smile to your face, and it just gives you hope and a little strength and makes you just want to just be happy. So wonderful piece.
Nice. Well, between you and Luke there, I'm going to walk along the same lines. This, to me, this read like a prologue, the opening introduction to something grander, something that you put as a foreword into a book. This could make a very wonderful children's story, something between that 7 to 12 range, where this is the introduction. You get the thought right there, and all of a sudden you blossom up and open up in the book itself, the characters, the scenery, because you already get given a little bit into it. Earth's Little Kings, Forages of the Spore, Mushroom Homes for Little Men and Wings. There's that notation, like Luke said, of Alice in Wonderland, but this walking a very fine path of those woodland deities. So this makes for a wonderful children's book, maybe 100, 150 pages long, that can walk itself and do two or three volumes.
I would agree.
All right, Jane. It's got that nice touch that you don't see these days, because it involves imagination.
Yes, I agree on that one as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Luke. That was wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And Gene, we're coming back to you.
Okay, Rex. Well, I'm going to put the next one up for you. This is one I requested for Monday's show, but I didn't get the permission until after the show. So we're going to put it up tonight, and it's an excellent piece. Here we go.
Okay. When Blood Was First Born at Lexington, by Rolling Stone. Between the seas our country tis, when first blood was drawn at Lexington, that which came by sharp bayonets, honorable measure of patriotism. I say to thee, sweet life, the laden breeze, free limbs to be the forest for trees, America's treasure is liberty. The red-brown grass where they now sleep, the glory for those where blood ran deep, that all good hearts built democracy, soldiers lifting our flag, uniting freedom. Beauty is found in patriots' eyes, beyond the dust and hideous grime, to heal past scars of tyrant's duress, for life is serene, all power to express. Where yet, glory came at amber sunset, with gratefulness and all who could rise beyond bitterness on tongues that cried. And be it now, one and noble, love of country where the heart did grope, where into poet's hand we awoke, beyond lost idols to sing new hope. We're glad you fought for rights preserved from that unpleasant battle near Concord, where burning bodies once made their stand, stretched across farmlands where death had scorned. Beyond the dust and low of the sun, beyond granite peaks and gleaming muskets, to everlast where this proud eagle flies, we are renewed this 4th of July. Where greatness shines, sea to shining sea, land of the free, bravery for this country. Beyond the shade of war's sad breaking, America, America, God shed his grace on the opponent. All right, Phil, what do you think?
Wow, hats off. I mean, this doesn't make you want to stand to your feet and you know, give appreciation for our liberty that we have. What really what struck me hardest was the red-brown grass where they now sleep, the glory for those where blood ran deep. That doesn't strike you hard. I mean, you know, where the grass is red and brown, because that's where the red and green kind of, you know, join colors, and it just soaks in, and it's just the blood of those who have, and then the burial ground of those who fought for our liberty and gave us what we have today. If that doesn't just tell you in just that one sentence or those two sentences, I don't know what else does. That is just wow, wonderful, wonderful write. And I'm sorry they didn't get to read it on Monday, because this would have been a great addition to that. Excellent write.
Excellent, DFL. Thank you very much. And Luke, how about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that this part here, that I say to thee, sweet life, the laden breeze, free limbs to be the forest for trees. America's treasure is liberty. And with that being said, I would say that it had like the thought of a sweet life and then a combination of free limbs to be the forest for trees. It kind of invoked the idea of support to me. I thought that this was a very beautiful way of connecting the two together. It felt like a bridge that really kind of just connects everything together while transitioning beautifully into many more very well-written words. I would highlight this as powerful, captivating, and it just really brings the appreciation forwards. I'd say it highlights the struggles really well, but it feels hopeful while also striking very hard. And the description of the history throughout is just like a perfect bridge into everything and connecting it all together.
Excellent. Thank you, Luke. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, when I read this piece, when I asked him originally for it to use on Monday, I'm reading it and I'm going, wow. You know, Roland's a great poet. And as I was reading, each stanza was just standout. You know, he had it all in here, everything that pertained to the thoughts for the 4th of July. But when I got down to this last stanza, where greatness shines, sea to shining sea, land of the free, bravery for this country, beyond the shade of war's sad breaking, America, America, God shed his grace on me. Actually, I got choked up when I read it, and I went, you know, that's so perfect. I didn't want to just not read it at all because we didn't have it on Monday. I thought that it was definitely worthy of everyone getting an opportunity to hear it read out loud. And you did an excellent job reading it, Rex. So great job, Rowan, and thank you so much for letting us read it on the show. And I appreciate it very much. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad to have read this because it's not often you see Roland offer up a full, straightforward piece, because he's very in-depth with his metaphors and cryptic voice when it comes to writing. But this is as straightforward as you can get. And that stanza that you read there, Luke, had me thinking of Jefferson's quote, from time to time, the tree of liberty must be fed with the blood of both patriots and tyrants alike. It is its natural fertilizer. And from there, you get the idea of the ever need for blossoming. So sacrifice comes along with getting rid of the tyrants, and that is the idea behind what started this. And people have forgotten these days what July 4th actually represents. That's why that last stanza sings so heartily to you, Gene, especially with that last line from the previous stanza, we are renewed this 4th of July. There's a note to understanding. He does, but not a lot of other people do. They just go out, celebrate, barbecue, throw fireworks without the full understanding because it's not taught. And that's a crying bloody shame. So this is kind of a not just a noted piece for that day and what it truly means. It's a noted thought to actually wake up people. You should remember your own bloody history. And if you're not, yep. then you should be asking why it isn't being taught.
Yeah.
So, great piece, Roland. Thank you very much.
Rex for president.
Yep.
Okay, Gene, what would you like to go next?
There we go. Okay, well, the next one I'm going to put up is called A Donkey's Bagatelle by Jack Blue. I'm going to give this one a read. Okay, A Donkey's Bagatelle, number 5, by Jack Blue. Okay, there we go. Did you really know me, Jack, when I toddled with the sack from your needy, weedy yard to the busy boulevard, like a shabby songwriter turning coal to sapphire? Did you understand me, Jack, when I didn't call you back, staggering to fairyland with a message on the sand just to join the jamboree rocking to the galaxy? Did you hear me twitter, Jack, when the theater sounded black with a donkey's dizzy song rolling to the starry throng like a magical express beyond a sky of happiness and hope?
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Luke, why don't we start with you, please? Oh, I got this was a we had a lecto from a Sunday's Todd Snyder contest of show, and this was one of those.
Yep.
I'm gonna keep it short and brief. I'm gonna say that I really enjoyed the rhyming in this one, but I don't really know what to say. But I enjoyed it.
That's perfect. Thank you, Luke. Phil, how about you?
I really like this, you know, because his name is Jack, and of course it's a donkey's bagatelle, and it can mean either something that's not of importance, or it could be a little game that you play. And I think it goes back to a little game that he plays with himself. As far as and if you go back to it, it says you think you know somebody. He's saying he's even talking about himself. He's even as a kid. He's like, hey, look, you didn't remember the crap that we did when we were kids. You know, you remember those times. And then you go, do you understand me, Jack? When I didn't call you back, like. When the thoughts that you had didn't remind you of what it was. And then, you know, did you not hear me twitter, Jack, when the theater sounded black? You know, it's basically saying I was writing you a message or trying to give you a message, but yet everything was just, you know, it was out in the dark, but yet, you know, like a magical express beyond the skies of happiness. I think it's just to himself, and I think it's sort of a sarcastic thing, like, yeah, you think you know yourself, but sometimes you really don't, if I'm not mistaken. But this is just an excellent way, if that's what he's trying to say. Great job.
Thank you, Bill. And Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, the questions at the beginning of each stanza, did you really know me, Jack? Did you understand me, Jack? Did you hear me, Twitter, Jack? You know, and I think that they went well with the prompt. You know, you think you know somebody? It's kind of like asking the questions of the person, kind of drawing them out and saying, you know, did you hear me, Twitter, Jack? You know, and it goes on to the little stanza, you know, when the theater sounded black with a donkey's dizzy song rolling to the starry throng, you know, like a magical express beyond the skies of happiness. You know, you ask a question, but what is the answer you really expect to get back? You know, so, you know, do you really know me? I don't know. I think it was a clever take on the prompt. It gave it a different kind of direction. It wasn't just cut and dry and, you know, do you think you know somebody? I mean, it wasn't like that. It kind of beat around the bush and just enough to make it interesting and intriguing. But clever work, and thanks for sharing, Jack Blue. Nicely done.
Great comments on it. Yeah, the Jack angle kind of threw me until I got into it, like a shabby songwriter with a message on the stand just to join the jamboree rocking to the galaxy. And then that last stanza, did you hear me twitter, Jack, when the theater sounded black? And I kind of, all right, is this a clever ploy and reference to Jack Black, the musician, the actor, you kind of know, because he did that. He had Tenacious D, and there was another group he had. Plus, he did School of Rock and some other movies. So I'm wondering if this was kind of a little playoff of using Jack Black as a little ploy to have a little bit of fun with this piece, because it does tell a funky little story, and Jack Black is kind of a funky character. So if it works that way, I'm probably wrong, but hell, that's just where I went. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. All right, Gene.
Okay, well, I want to make mention of something, okay? It's not every day that you have a Luke on your show, okay? But this is the third Luke for the night, okay? We got Luke on the phone. We have the piece by Luke Allen, and this one is by Luke the Bluebell. So we got two Lukes tonight, so I think we should write that down somewhere. Okay, that's an unusual occurrence. So, anyway, just saying, you know, nothing over the top. But a great job. So here we go. We put up the next one. Everybody's in there going, how random is she? I'm pretty random when I want to go. Okay, here we go. This piece is called Son of a Gun by Weaver of Dreams. So let me play that audio. Okay.
I walk amongst you like a wraith. The light you sense when the moon is but a thought. I know pleasure as I smell your fear. That frisson of agony, like warm acid dripping on skin. You have no choice but to give yourself to me, melted by my all-consuming corrosive energy. As a sea of terror laps against this rough terrain, I sharpen my knives. Let the fun begin. When you dream, you enter my realm. At that point, you are mine, powerless and pliant. I almost feel bad for you, but there's no need. You'll have forgotten this by tomorrow. Yes, there will be a slight feeling of guilt, the uneasiness of a memory just out of reach. Be grateful, my dear, that I can edit those thoughts, or you would be curled up, sobbing in sorrow. There are chambers untold in this valley of pain, each with a patina of perversion. Here a man, chained to a wall, cannot reach his dying wife, who is screaming and begging for his aid. Next, the woman is stabbing what she thinks is a pig, while I can see the girl that she's killing. There is a hill of starving men, slowly saving each other's flesh, which tastes like chicken, I've heard it said. Why do I do it, you ask? The practice, of course. What else? My father will retire someday. He'll never die, I know, but he's bound to get bored hearing the constant screaming out of tune. The begging, that's different. You'll never tire of that. Or you're disgusted at what we make you do. Look at the time. I had better send your spirit back. It's been fun. We must do this again. Soon.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Phil, you get to kick this one off. What do you think?
Bravo, bravo. I'm standing at the tip of my toes to this piece. This is something that just, woof. What really strikes you at the end is, look at the time. I had better send your spirit back. It's been fun. You must do this again soon. It's like it's the devil saying, we'll take your soul for the moment and make you just do things that you just do not want to do, or do things that you're going to turn your soul into me, and you're just going to do all these horrible, horrible things. But let me sharpen my knife and let the fun begin. He just starts tearing them down piece by piece, and then they realize the things that they're doing because they've got some other kind of greed or envious thing that they're doing for themselves and throwing away everything that they love just to get this one thing in life. And then when tomorrow they'll see that the things that they have killed or they have forgotten. So this is just an, a, outstanding piece. Should be on the front page. This is amazing. Just amazing piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. Luce, how about you? What do you think?
My thoughts on this is, I'll start with, I know pleasure as I smell your fear, that prison of agony, like warm acid dripping on skin. You have no choice but to give yourself to me, melted by my all-consuming corrosive energy. And my thoughts on this is, it's ruthless. It's very brutal while speaking in such power and might that there is almost like no empathy within. The imagery is quite haunting, and I just feel like there's a crazy amount of insanity within this right that really screams a terrifying story and sets the scenario. I'd say that this is a very deep dive into the insanity and the psyche that a human may possess, and the final part to me suggests that this has happened before, possibly with other people. But overall, I'd say it's beautifully written and an amazing piece. Very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Luke. And Jean, how about you?
I knew you were going to say my name because I'm the only one left before you. I thought this was just an excellent piece. Weaver can really tell a tale. Her voice is perfect for these kind of like. I found that it was, you know, wonderfully dark and chilling and incredibly expressed. She really amazes me with the way she writes. She really does. I mean, I could pick out bits and pieces of this, but there's so many wonderful lines in here. Imagery is just so spot on. And it does, it gives you kind of an uneasy feeling at parts of it, you know, because she makes it look so easy to say these things. It's like, I'm glad she's on our side, you know. But well done, and thank you so much, Kate. I really appreciate it, and thank you. Amazing.
Great comments, everybody. That opening stanza was really good, but it's the second one that leads you off with something that you should take note of. When you dream, you enter my realm. At that point, you are mine, powerless and pliant. I almost feel bad for you. But there's no need. You'll have forgotten this by tomorrow. Yes, there will be a slight feeling of guilt, the uneasiness of a memory just out of reach. Be grateful, my dear, that I can edit those thoughts, or you would be curled up, sobbing in sorrow. Well, that's a great stanza, but that you enter my realm. So this gives you that that Freddy Krueger atmosphere. You are entering my world. This is where you get delivered unto that which I do. But then he offers up the angle of editing those thoughts at the end of this horrific reign through his world, just so that you won't be a miserable lunatic the next morning, because he wants to do this again and again and again. Now, that idea with him up front, I walk amongst you like a wraith. The light you sense when the moon is but a thought. I know pleasure as I smell your fear, that prism of agony like warm acid dripping on skin. What a great note with that, explaining who and what he is. That one, that dream weaver, that sense of evil that sits within the back of your mind that draws out the nastiest of nightmares that you still can grasp but not totally understand yet. You know there's something freaky and scary about it. So I think she kind of played off herself, weaver of dreams into dream weaver. And this is that one angle of thought where we always question dreams we have that we remember. And then the back angle of this, why do I do it, you ask? To practice, of course. What else? My father will retire someday. It does offer up that thought of being the devil, but even the father of the dream weaver, since he is offering himself up as young and youthful, and this, there's such an exuberant note of happiness and almost callous mirth that walks through this piece that makes it worth the read, as well as little tidbits like slowly savoring each other's flesh, which tastes like chicken, I've heard it said. a little note to it, playful humor as well. Nicely done, Weaver. All right, Jean, we're coming up back to you.
Okie dokie. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by our third Luke of the evening, which is rare, first Luke. And Luke J.R., okay, I'm going to ask you to read your piece for us now. So here we go.
Okay. Latuanism, Loyalty by Luke J.R. Between you and me, there's a glass wall of uncertainty. Percentages, changes like the vision you seem to have forgotten. There's management between the loyalty of two lovers. Yet the monster in the middle seems to have brothers. I'm partly a stranger who has a wholeheartedly anger. For the percentage of 50, I'll travel where I need to be. Stranger, solitude. Loyalty is drifting through these flowers without any petals attached. Loyalty is climbing these walls without the thatch. Brighter embers fill the skies of lies, treachery, bestowed by the hunger upon the mountain of promises. There's eye contact through the glass wall, yet I'm gazing while eyes are starting to get sore. I have a sore eyes for the hundreds of lies that you've told me, yet I stay by your side because I'm an empathetic sea. You can swim all the way through, and I'll still never leave you. Waves of hurt, waves of pain, I'll just start over with you again. You can treat me however you wish to, because I'm blindly in love with you. That's not a dream coming true, that's a nightmare of loyalty. I'm strung between you and a tree that I carved our initials into. Bark certainly bites back when a knife has driven through you. Peace at last, there's red gushing out my sides. I'm someone that never hides what I feel because I know. If I show you the pain you caused me, loyalty won't last. For I know that if you were to pull back the wool over my eyes, I'll never truly be alone. I'll always be last. Garden of loyalty, with the branches passing green tea, healthy as can be, I'm a stranger to the branches that entangle me. Your apple is poisonous, but I want to bite it more. Addiction. I want to try your apple with the worm that's within me. Contradiction. Mountains of promises fueled by the lakes that burn brighter. Oil was stopping me from breathing. I could not reach the surface. Yet the loyalty stays within me. I'm begging for you to end me. Yet the trees don't act like you and me. Leaves, branches, and sticks. No wonder I settled like the pigs, and I'm building bricks. Let's remove the wolf with the wool that no longer exists. Let's blow down the sticks huddled together next to bricks. And let's destroy the mountains of promises, broken dreams. Let's allow ourselves to reel. Am I as loyal as it seems?
Hey, Luke. Thank you very much. And Sal, why don't we start with you?
I need that kind of loyalty. Do I need that? I mean, this is a. I mean, it's got so much pain in it. I mean, that your emotions just, you know, just roll off the page. And what really struck me, Luke, was the stranger solitude. Loyalty is drifting through these flowers without any petals attached. And that, to me, is just the thorns, just the stem and the thorns that you still, you're holding on to it, even though it's cutting you, and you're still looking for the beauty. You're still looking for the scent of romance. You're still looking for something to latch onto and to pollinate with. So that's what this, I mean, this is just a beautiful piece, and it rings truth to so many times that people just hang on even when they feel like you're in that little glass box that you're trying to say there's a glass wall, but you're in a glass box for them, and they'll pick you out of there and toy with you as much as they want and put you back in and kind of laugh at you and just watch you suffocate in your own loyalty and trying to love them, and yet they're the ones that's not they're the ones that's wilting, not you. So I mean, just keep on. This is just amazing life.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well said there, Phil. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think that this was an incredible write, Luke. You know, it's so, I don't use it, well, it's not really in depth, but there's so much to it. There's a lot of meat on the bones, let's put it that way. you know, loyalty. You know, you, sometimes you have to stop by and think, loyalty, you know, what it doesn't quite work, you know, for it, our loyalty doesn't always work for us, you know, it works for the other guy. You know, because we just step in and we go, yeah, we're behind you. We're not going to give up. We're going to hang in there. We're going to, you know, just stay with it. In the meantime, you know, we're getting battered and bruised because, it's, you know, the other side of the pairing is not quite as loyal or as in tune with us. Or some of them just take advantage of it because they know we're not going to go anywhere. But I think that it was really well done and well said, and I think it was a great piece. And I see you wrote this for one of Neutron's contests. That's pretty cool, and I'm sure she enjoyed it. Great. God, yeah, I can kind of feel some of this because, you know, I think we all can because we've all been through something similar on different pieces and parts of it. But, sometimes it's easy to cut your losses and move on. And it's not always easy, depending on who you are and how you are. But definitely well done. Well done and well expressed.
So, thank you very much.
Nice job. You're welcome. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jean. This is a heavy piece. It reminds me of a song by George Harrison some years ago, called Within You, Without You. There's that note of you are deeply within this piece as it is, but there's a second outside look of it, you looking in on yourself, so to speak. I don't know if that makes much sense, but you're holding two realms. You're noting that which is going on, but you're also noting that which it is doing to you, so that you got two sides of yourself on the same wavelength in the same piece. And you hit on it. I want to try your apple with the worm that's within me. Contradiction. Mountains of promises fueled by the lakes that burn brighter. Oil was stopping me from breathing. I could not reach the surface, yet the loyalty stays within me. I'm begging for you to end me. Yet the trees don't act like you and me. Leaves, branches, sticks. No wonder I settle like the pigs. I'm building bricks. And then you hit on the wolf. So the idea with the pigs, the three little pigs, the wolf come around, blew the house down, then it moved into a brick house, and finally had a bit of a stronger foundation to sit themselves within. And then you drop in the wolf that pulls the wool that over the eye, so to speak, except this one, you want the wolf to pull the wool off. So you've got that vision of seeing that which is actually going on, because you hit on another point of being addicted. And that is why there's that notion of putting up with the treachery, the lies, the thought of being cut deeply to the point where blood spills, so to speak, ways of hurt, ways of pain. I'll just start over with you again. You can treat me however you wish because I'm blindly in love with you. That's not a dream coming true. That's a nightmare of loyalty. How one can be driven to the point where they would sacrifice their own self-worth and their mental capacity at the foot of another. That's pretty strong.
Thank you. Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
It always comes back to me. Okay.
Oh, eventually.
Eventually. It's the way, the world is. My world, you know. Your world, it all comes back to you. Okay, let me see what I have here. I have the next piece is by Felon. And Felon, if you'd be so kind as to give that a read for us. That would be
all righty. Let's see. Let me read. Here we go. And this is called Skin for Thought. Here we go. It says, a worm's feast lies just beneath six packed feet deep. Menu posted in names inscribed along the slate death stone. Ravens gathered to unkindness. The reaper brought so grim. Bodies bled and rooted. Veins beat deep, dead. Grass sprout weeds greener never grew from inside out. somber dreams of the slumber of its tombs. White crosses memorialize its spirits, singing, skins pale. Supines positions a turning of corpse ground into scattered lines. Early birds gets a worm when the reaper ends life, set to his time. Stringing and passing in day or night, providing truth to any existence, he is the true puppet master. End poem.
Great read, Belle. Thank you very much. And Luke, why don't you kick us off with a thought or two?
Okay. May I go second? I'm going to say that this one, my thoughts on this one, is that although it is short, I'm going to say that it feels like a perfect description of dealing with, like, death.
Yeah.
Just kind of, like, based on the worm's feast. So a worm's feast lies just beneath 6 packed feet deep. Menu posted in names inscribed along the slate to death's stone. Ravens gather to unkindness the reaper brought so grim. Bodies bled and rooted veins beat dead. Just, you know, absolutely powerful and just a very beautiful write overall.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Luke. Gene, how about you?
Well, I have to say that I think it's a darker look at death. That's for sure. you know, straight to the point. And it's not, you know, about the, you know, how would I put it? It's not about maybe I'll get back to what it is about. You know, I mean, you know, worms feast lies just beneath 6 packed feet deep. Menu posted in names inscribed along the slate of death stone. It's a powerful piece, and it puts you off, you know, because it's like, you know, because none of us want to stop and think about that angle, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, no.
Sure.
You know, kind of makes you think twice about dying, you know, makes you want to stay on the upside. But, you know, and then it goes on, the ravens gather to unkindness, that sweep of breath so grim, bodies bled and rooted veins beat dead. Just, I don't know, Felon, it just, I'm trying to think of the way I wanted to word it to begin with. It's not, I don't know, it's not on the ghostly side of death. You know, this is on, like, the cut and dry of it. The ravens, like, they're just, like, props. You know, I mean, you really hit it in the first line. You know, and where it goes, grass sprouts, weeds green, it never grew from inside out. Like, really, like, you know, just real points are made here. I don't know. I just
right.
think that it's a dark and kind of right. You know, it's not theatrical in the way you're putting it out there. You're not putting it out there and romanticizing it or anything else. It's just direct. And I guess that's why it's throwing me to comment on it, because I'm like, how do I see that? You know, but it's a good piece. It's well written. I mean, it is. And well expressed. And the wording is great. So it just, yeah, it just makes you stop and go, oh, I don't know. But it was well done. And as always, a great brevity. So nice work.
Thank you.
Great comments, you too. All right, Belle, there's a note to understanding in this. And giving the devil his due, so to speak. And in doing that, you actually get to truly live in the moment once you cross that threshold in understanding. And you drop in a couple of little playful pieces. I love that film with ravens gathered to unkindness, the reaper brought so grim. But you're offering up the grim reaper and the ravens, and also what the ravens represent, an unkindness. And you're offering up, it's, hey, death is an unkindness in its projection, but it doesn't have to beat us up with the fact that, yes, it happens to everyone. And even the grass sprouts, weeds green, and never grew from inside out was kind of and I turned to, all right, something else was the growth from the inside out, which is the thought there. And I like that thought up in the first line, beneath six packed feet deep. I kind of offers up that note to a six-pack of beer almost, Worm Feast. That's their notation. It also hits on that idea of even in death, there is life, because, hey, you know what? Everything disintegrates, turns dust. It's food for something else. So, like you hit, early bird gets the worm when the reaper ends his life set to his time. And the last line, stringing a passing day in, passing in day or night, providing truth to any existence, he's the true puppet master. And there's a note to reality, an understanding in that last line of if you can get past the thought of death itself, you can actually understand the thought of living in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that I've been battling an illness for now for going on almost 3 years. But just to let you know that just because things seem grim doesn't always mean that you're going to be packed that deep that quick, and that there's the puppet master. But, you know, he don't have to have the strings to how you live when you're alive. He gets them when you're dead. So that's just me fighting. I was wrote 8 months ago when I was really fighting. So that was just the way to get past it and say, you know what, it ain't over till it's over. The worm's not feasting yet, and they ain't getting this. So that was my way of saying, yep, today.
And that's the point. Once you come to that bit of knowledge, you can actually live for yourself in the moment and enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And it ain't over until the fat lady sings, heard her sing yet, unless I get to sing.
And be happy doing it.
So thank you, guys. Thank you for letting me share that.
Good to hear you laughing. That's the fell we've known over the past few years. The one, the grinny, the giggling one.
She's coming back. She's working on it. I'm working.
Perfect. All right, Jean. I think we got time enough for at least one more.
I think so. And I have one. And I'm going to ask you to read it, Rex. This is Guy Bowers.
Uh-huh. Sky Burial by Scott Sharp. Honor in death. Divide my physical presence. Cut by the Tibetan burial master. Lay my parts, my corpse in the open air at the foot of the mountain of time. Let nature devour the hope for future within me. Watch the Dakinis, the sky dancers, the angels descend from the heavens to feast upon my promise for future. Let me join nature again in the circle of life as I dance with the bearded vultures. End poem. All right, Jean, you get to comment first.
What a unique, see, you're doing to me again, Rex. I think that it's a unique piece. It seems that there's a Tibetan burial thing that I'm not aware of, so I'm just kind of learning as I'm going here. I thought that nature devoured the hope for future within me. Watch the Dakinis, the sky dancers. The angels descend from the heavens to feast upon my promise for future. This is a more romanticized version of death. See what I mean, Fallon? See? I mean, I'd come up with the opposite. But it was very well worded, and it gave it a much softer quality, and it's clever. And I don't know anything about this, so. But here it's saying about celestial burial means the person's body is tapped into perfect pieces and laid out for the Dakinis to come and feast upon. Oh, well, so much for romance. That's a different kind of take on it. So I don't know now. Go on. Get someone else to comment because I'm lost. I have to figure out what I think.
Oh, it's true. It's that notion of even in death, the body can feed that which still lives. And in this case, the Dakinis, which are those bearded vultures, get to have their meal, so to speak. It keeps them alive a little while longer. And the death isn't looked upon as being wasted in that effort. It's used as another passing note to that which needs food gets food. So, nicely done, Scott. Phil, how about you?
This reminds me of the circle of life, like Mufasa. It's feeding nature of what you know. Your life is gone, but yet you can give nutrients to those that still live, and to still extend into the world, into the sky, and still be in the bellies of something, and let it harvest upon your flesh, because no longer are you needing that. You spiritually went somewhere else, and that now you're just a part of nature in itself. So I think that is just beautifully written. I love it. I'm going to have to clip this to my page. I like this a lot. Excellent. Right.
All right. Thank you, Phil. And Luke, how about you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very beautiful write. I would say that it's a beautiful description of one way of describing freedom. I'd say the foot of the mountain of time is, you know, a very great description. I just felt like the use of angels descending from the heavens makes it quite, you know, heavenly. But the mention, but this is kind of the key part that I was drawn to, the mention of dancing with bearded vultures is interesting because they are also winged creatures just like the angels. And I feel like it contrasts very well together because vultures are often hungry and, again, they circle around death. And another kind of parallel is the circle of life. So it kind of goes in like a beautiful parallel, and they both have satisfaction.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Luke. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okay, well, I have two carryovers, and they're on the board for next Friday. I want to thank you, Luke, for calling in and hanging with us all night. Fallon, thank you for calling in and hanging with us. Rex, as always,
yes.
Thanks for co-hosting with me. Great reading here and comments tonight. I bought my own. I was tripping all over myself, but that's okay. Next week I'll do better. And I hope everyone really does have a wonderful weekend and a great week next week. I look forward to next Friday and seeing everybody again. And don't forget to follow Heart Center Part Saint after this show, 12:30, with Faziana and Babler. And, enjoy. Hope everyone has a good night. Thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for sharing.
Good night, Sal. Good night, Lee. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.